some of my songs I have casually mentioned the fact that I like to drink beer. This little song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow. I like beer. It helps me unwind, and sometimes it makes me feel mellow.
Makes him feel mellow.
Welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. It's May 17th, 2011. It's American Craft Beer Week. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43, joined by my co-host Ray Dieter from the DBA Bars. How are you, Ray?
Hey, man, I'm on time and under budget, as usual.
You're awesome. We'll give a big shout-out to our sponsor, GreatBrewers.com. Whether you're interested in looking at the Beer Cloud mobile app or testing your beer IQ with the 100 or 20-question test, check out GreatBrewers.com. And also, thank you, Good Beer Seal, GoodBeerSeal.com, an association of 27 New York City beer bars that serve, promote, and support good beer. If you have any questions, you can email us at any time, beersessions@gmail.com. And you can call live in the studio, 718-497-2128. We've got our very special roving reporter, Dave Broderick.
Jimmy.
Of Blind Tiger, who's here tonight. And we have a special call-in guest coming in, Julia Hertz from the Brewers Association, to talk about American Craft Beer Week. Hi, Julia. Are you on the line?
Hi, gentlemen. How are you?
How are you?
I'm good.
Good. So tell us about American Craft Beer Week.
Yeah, well, it's a big week, May 16th to the 22nd. It's going on right now. And this is a week that's been going on since 2006, put on by the Brewers Association and our website, craftbeer.com. But bottom line is, this is a week of celebrations with celebrations in all 50 states and tens of thousands of beer lovers participating. It's a big deal in the little grassroots world of small craft beer brewers.
Julia, how can listeners find out more about American Craft Beer Week? Do you have a website?
Yeah, if they want to know what's happening event-wise or how to get involved, ideas how to celebrate, craftbeer.com has all the information on ways to celebrate and what breweries are participating, and then also, you know, they can consider hosting a tasting at home, which is another great way to do it.
And what are some of the events going on in New York City?
Yeah, New York City, you guys have some stuff beyond Rock Bottom and Gordon Beers, who are doing things in most of their locations. You've got a lot of special tastings going on in locations, but from breweries like Weyerbacher and Saranac, Lake Placid, Brooklyn. So I'm real excited to see some of these breweries engaging some of the retailers and getting those establishments going to usually mostly releasing special release beers. So that's a real fun way to kind of gravitate towards getting to know something new or maybe getting to know a brewery that you've never tried.
Ray, are you familiar with American Craft Beer Week?
I am. I've gotten some emails about it, and I'm looking forward to it. And we're trying to put together some events at our DBA locations, and I'm looking forward to it.
All right, man. Well, one thing about this week, it's pretty cool. Every year I hear a little more about it. What do you think it says about the state of craft beer in the United States, Julia?
If you're asking me that, it says a lot. I mean, like I said, this is a grassroots effort. There's no national advertising behind this. And to get registered celebrations in all 50 states, this is not a large brewery effort. This is an effort from kind of the bottom up. I call it trickle-up economics. And I think what it says is that we've had a shift in beer culture. You guys know it. It's one of the reasons why you get to do your show is because you've attracted listeners that are into beers beyond just light American lager and, you know, different beers at different occasions. And the fact that there's so much interest today behind things like this, I mean, American Craft Beer Week in Denver, for example, is trending on Twitter, and we've had more than 11,000 people have watched the video on it, and more than 35,000 followers on the Facebook page for this week. So what it says is there's a lot of engaged and active beer lovers out there that are also ready to turn other people on to more fuller flavored craft beers and show them how well it goes with food, and you know, the future looks
Julia?
Right for beer in America.
Julia,
yeah.
This is Ray Dieter from DBA. Hey, how long have you been doing this? How many years have you been doing this event?
Since 2006, it's been a week. Before that, it was a month. And today's breweries have gotten very busy, so it's a great timed week before the busy summer festival season. And we've had two congressional resolutions that were passed from U.S. You know, House of Representatives literally passed congressional resolutions behind it. So 2006 was our starting date.
So it's been a while now. So you got like some history behind you.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'd love to, if Dave's still on, I mean, Blind Tiger, amazing place. When I go to New York, that last time, that was one of my big destinations. I brought my mom there. And
We're very popular with moms.
Yeah, I mean, it's just such a cozy little spot. I really, really enjoy what you got going on there, for sure.
Well, thanks. And I actually heard yesterday someone told me that TGIFs throughout the country are adding like 30-plus taps at every single location for craft beer. Did you hear anything about that?
For craft beer?
Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't heard that for American Craft Beer Week, but I have been hearing rumblings that TGIF is getting more progressive. A lot of the chains are Wild Bill Buffalo Wings and some others as well. So, I mean, that's all a good sign of the times. You know?
Yeah, I mean, I would think that would really, I mean, that gets it in, definitely into the mainstream. So,
but we're not talking about like just like loads of, you know, Bud Light.
I mean, I'm sure, you know, some ice. Of the beer will be, you know, something, you know, that you wouldn't drink, Ray, but... But I'm sure they'll have some good things, too, and it just gets people thinking about it.
I think you'd be surprised at what I drink, Dave.
Well, Ray, what did you drink this weekend? It's always a good time.
You know what I drank this weekend that I really loved is that New Brooklyn Summer Ale. They have out in cans, and it's a great beer. I had a little, I had some in a can here, actually, on the show last week, and then I got some at the bar, and I pour, it's really a great summertime beer. Light body, really fantastic.
Julia, I don't want to make you call out any favorites, but... Can you tell us one of your favorite beers from this weekend that you drank?
Well, honestly, I get asked that all the time, but if you're going to specifically peg it to from this week, I celebrated American Craft Beer Week last night, the kickoff in Old Chicago, who's trying to break the record for the largest celebration of the most people, 7,500 World Beer Tour members they were trying to get to sign the Declaration of Beer Independence, which is tied to American Craft Beer Week. But anyway, the answer to your awesome question is Jonathan Shikes from Westward Magazine brewed a special collaboration beer with Ska Brewing Company in Southern Colorado, and they released it at Old Chicago in Denver, and I got to try it. It was an Imperial Pilsner, and it was, I think, 8.7% ABV, a big sipper of a Pilsner, but just packed full of flavor. I really enjoyed it. It was a fun, creative one for sure.
I think you must have one of the best jobs I've ever heard of. How do we get a job like yours? What is your job?
Well, it's a hard job. I work hard. I'm busy, you know, advocating and educating on what's going on for today's small breweries. And there's 1,700 of them. I started as a home brewer. I'm not your average person because not everybody has this type of job. I sample all the time, but I tend to not drink a lot. I savor the flavor. I'm a certified Cicerone, BJCP judge. Just somehow really got interested in it probably when my brother had a beer can collection when we were little, and from there on in, I was always interested.
That's my question, actually, Julia. This is Ray again. I was looking at your bio. You're from Southern Florida. Is that right?
Well, I went to college in Tampa in South Florida, USF, but I'm from the Washington, D.C. area.
Oh, okay, that makes more sense. I was mistaken. I saw that you were from Southern Florida, and I was thinking that like that's kind of like that used to be a beer desert for a long time because of the laws down there.
And it was tough.
And to find somebody that's gotten so into beer, into craft beer especially, from that part of the country is pretty impressive because all the odds are against you down there, really. I mean, I guess that's changed a bit.
It's changed a lot now. Yeah. Now it's kind of a hotbed, but... Yeah, it used not to be.
But the Washington, D.C. aspect actually does kick in there because I know there's been good beer down there for quite a while.
Yeah, I think D.C.'s got an advancing beer culture for sure, where you guys are in New York, absolutely advancing beer culture. Florida, still because a little behind the times because of the size of the packages were limited for so long, but that, with the laws loosening up, I do think it's starting to become a little happier of a place on the beer diversity side.
Julia, one thing about American Craft Beer Week, we know there's some really great craft beer weeks across the country. Do you think it's better that people celebrate craft beer weeks, you know, throughout the year, or do you think more people should try to join in with the American Craft Beer Week?
Yeah, I mean, I love that question because there are almost 30 beer weeks that we're aware of, and we list them all on craftbeer.com. We try to share information about that, and we position American Craft Beer Week as the mother of all beer weeks because it was one of the first, and it's the only national one. And you're right that there's five other craft beer weeks, either state or local ones, going on right now in coordination with American Craft Beer Week, and I think that's, you know, more power to those areas to kind of piggyback on the attention right now. And then the ones that do their beer weeks during other times in the year is best for them and those local communities. So I think beer weeks are a sign of the times, and whenever they're chosen to be put on by those local communities is a good thing, and we want to support that and talk it
out. Awesome. So we should go to craftbeer.com. Check out what you guys are doing. Learn more about it. And also, maybe if we don't have a craft beer week in our community, we could start one. And we could probably reach out to you, and you could give us some pointers too, right?
Yeah, well, you guys have New York Craft Beer Week, and I can get you the dates. But it's a pretty
But around the country,
deal,
too. So I'm saying for other people, because we have listeners in Michigan and Florida. It's But Craft Beer Week, craftbeer.com is a good place to start, right, to check that out?
Yes.
All right. I want to introduce a couple other guests. Julia, stay on the line because there's some pretty neat people here. We have two people, Nick Meyer and Lisa LaCourte, who are at the French Culinary Institute in New York City, and they're just starting to implement a beer curriculum, and it's kind of neat. So why don't you stay on the line and listen to what they have to say. Nick and Lisa, how are you?
Hey.
How you doing?
It's so cool because we met at a Museum of Food and Drink party, Nick, and you said, tell us a little more about what we talked about and what you're trying to do at French Culinary Institute.
Yeah, well, we come from, you know, primarily a food background. We were both trained in, you know, restaurants and various other food service stuff. And we're also both, you know, homebrewers and interested in beers, you know, just recreationally, of course. And you know, we were both working at FCI and noticed that there was sort of a lack of beer education at the school, and especially considering how much, you know, you mentioned TGI Fridays. You know, I like to think of about Thomas Keller or Ferran Adrià, guys who are incorporating beer into their sort of restaurant food concepts.
Yeah.
And it's important. We realize that there's a place for this in the food industry, in restaurants, and I think we want to educate our students about that.
Right. Whether it's pairing or cooking with beer or whatever. I want to talk about Julia's kind of trickle-up theory a little bit. A lot of what's happening at the school is really coming from the students. We talk to the students a lot throughout the program, and the one thing that they kept repeating over and over again was that they really wanted to learn more about beer. You know, beer has made just a tremendous impact in the culinary world over the past 10 years, and we really want to move that forward. And Nick and I are putting a lot of work into getting something up and running, and it's going to happen very soon.
Julia, are you aware of any at any colleges or culinary schools across the country that have a really good beer education program or beer sommelier program?
I feel like I'm starting to hear about them more. I've worked with culinary students from the Culinary School for the Rockies and getting them educated on what they do for us at the Great American Beer Festival. And it's amazing to listen to their fundamental questions, because the food arts world has kind of changed and evolved with craft beer, as you know, Nick and Lisa know. And with that, these chefs need tools, and their tools are like, what does malt taste like? They need descriptors, and they're really coming from it from a basic level. So there is the need, and I think an amazing opportunity out there for schools to become known for it. But it's not like there's more schools beyond like Johnson and Wales and a few other little pocket places. So this is wide open right now.
Yeah, it's about time that I think that beer is like finding its place in the culinary world. When we first started in New Orleans, we've talked about this before, people were amazed that anyone would sell good beer in New Orleans, but the fact is that some of the great chefs and the great restaurants in the world are down there, and they're down there with their wonderful palates, and once good beer was made available to them, they went crazy for it. And
if you just say we had a bunch of culinary students and they went to you, and they needed to learn about beer 101, what would you want to teach them?
Oh, I would go to old school. I would go with like the old original European styles. Look at the saison styles. Look at the traditional English beer styles. And you know, I've done a lot of classes with beer 101, and And I usually start off with like a traditional American beer like a Budweiser or a Miller. Start there, and then take them on a journey like where beer began and how it ended up at Budweiser. Now see where it's going. And after they've explored all these new different styles, you know, the styles I've mentioned, the other ones that we all know and love, you know, the double IPAs, even the crazy things out there. And then take them back to a Budweiser or to a Miller or Coors after they've explored all these things, and usually they have rude awakening, or actually a really great awakening, because they really do appreciate the changes.
Okay, we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll talk more with our guests about beer education. We'll be back in a moment on Beer Sessions Radio.
There's a man who leads a life of danger. To everyone he meets, he stays a stranger. With every move he makes, another chance he takes. Odds are he won't live to see tomorrow. Secret agent man, secret agent man. They've given you a number and taken away your name. Of pretty faces that you find. A pretty face can hide.
Welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Our sponsor is GreatBrewers.com, a comprehensive website aimed at bringing the beer community together. Check out GreatBrewers.com. We're here with Nick Meyer and Lisa LaCourte from French Colony Institute, Dave Broderick from Blind Tiger, Ray Dieter, my co-host from DBA. And we've got Julia from the... I'm always confused about this. It's the Brewers Association. Is that what it is, Julia?
That's what it is.
All right. Julia Hertz, Brewers Association. And we know some really cool people from that. We know Steve Hindy from Brooklyn Brewery, who's really involved in it. And yep. We're happy to learn more about you. And again, we will direct people to craftbeer.com to learn more about what you guys are doing and American Craft Beer Week. So we've got Nick and Lisa, who are from French Colony Institute, who are instructors who are trying to create a beer curriculum. And I would like to ask Dave Broderick from Blind Tiger what he would do if he had some young culinary students he wanted to teach, get them a beer 101 class. What would you want them to learn, Dave?
Well, I think there's two great books out there. Garrett Oliver wrote Brewmaster's Table, which is, I mean, not only is it a good, you know, beer and food pairing book, but it gives you some great descriptions just about beer styles, how beer is made, in just such an articulate, clear way. I still read it every once in a while, but I always give it to new bartenders that we hire, and we just got a new head chef, and so he's got it now. And then Randy Moser's book, Tasting Beer, I think is also really good. So it gives you a really good background. Obviously, Cicerone is a great way to, it forces you to learn a lot of stuff so you can pass the exams and work your way up that too. But I think, you know, definitely reading a little bit and then going out and tasting with that background would help a lot.
Hey, Dave, have you seen this new book? The authors were on the show last week. What's the book called, Jimmy?
I just bought it. Beercraft?
Beercraft. My God.
Beercraft, really good. William Boswick and...
Yeah.
Robin?
Kill me. Renee's on
anyway, so bad. It's an amazing book.
Yeah. William Boswick, Beercraft.
I've been looking at it. I got a copy last week right before the show, and then I've been like, I couldn't get my head out of it.
Well, you know, he's actually the stealth beer writer for the Wall Street Journal.
Right.
He didn't tell us that the whole time. We had him on the show. We promoted his book, and he said, oh, you know, by the way, I'm the beer writer for the Wall Street Journal, and I need to, you know, learn more about Italian beer. So we introduced him to some Italian importers.
Yeah, Jen went on and on about that book, so I was like, all right, I'll buy it. And I want to up my home brewing skills. So
Jesse Rymel is the other author. Jesse Rymel.
Thanks, Jack.
Thanks, Jack.
So Nick and Lisa, do you guys have a curriculum? I mean, what would you teach your students about beer? Do you have books? Do you have any certain direction for them?
We're pretty much writing this from the ground up, so it's all open for us. And I think as educators, we have to start with the basics, and we have to start with teaching them what fermentation is. You know, we have to address everybody as if they really don't have a clue as to what's happening. So we're going to start with just teaching fermentation, and then we're going to just start tasting from there. pairing with some bits of food and ales and lagers and different categories, and we'll take it from there.
Are you guys going to focus on French beer at all?
I think we'll probably try and do that. I think, you know, interesting point you touched on earlier was the old world versus the new world,
right,
kind
sure.
of thing, you know, and I think the same thing that's happened with wine has happened with beer, where old world wine is meant to be consumed with food, and that's why part of the reason why it tastes the way it does.
Mm-hmm.
I think the same thing is true with old world beer. You know, I mean, as an American beer culture, we drink beer, and we're only starting to think about pairing it with food.
Right,
right, it's kind of gone the other way. It's gone from just quaffing in the pub with your pals to actually pairing with really good food.
Right.
And France has a great brewing culture as well. I mean, there's a lot of great Saison style beers mm-hmm. in the Beer de Garde.
Yeah,
especially in the northern area.
Yeah, and the subtle, you know, I think much more subtle, you know, in the same way that, you know, old world wines tend to be a lot more subtle than new world wines.
Oh, yeah.
You know, which is not to say one is better than the other.
Yeah, I wouldn't compare the French beers to the American beers. I'd compare them to maybe the Belgian beers or other European
right.
beers. Because we're out of our minds here in America. You know, we just like make everything bigger, better.
Absolutely.
Stronger, harder, all that kind of stuff.
And you can't, you know, we have a lot of hop-forward beers here that
right.
people are getting out of control with, and it's very difficult to pair with a hop forward beer
and to cook with
and
they're,
to
like you, they're terrible to cook
they are
with.
Terrible
right.
to cook with yeah
the chemistry just doesn't work at all.
It
yeah,
doesn't
we,
work
we with our new head chef, we've been playing around trying to cook with stuff, and you know, the sours work pretty well. They have like a similar to a wine profile, and but yeah, you really have to be careful, because even if it's a malty beer, if it's a balanced malty beer, that means it's got a lot of hops in it, so the minute you start cooking with it, the hops start that aftertaste starts
right.
coming out.
Right.
Are you implementing any cooking with beer classes into your program?
Not immediately. It's something that we're looking at down the road.
So right now you're talking about fermentation.
Yes.
So if you didn't know what fermentation is, fermentation a dirty word?
It's baby steps, right? What you said?
Baby steps, yeah. No, it's definitely not a dirty word. We talk about it a little bit when we talk about wine, and we get into it a little bit more with the distilling process, but we're going to revamp that whole curriculum area right now to include much more beer, because you can't get to distilled until you talk about wort, right? So we're going to get into that a little bit more, and the students are really driving this. I mean, I had a few minutes at the end of a class one day. Literally, I had 10 minutes, and we started to talk about beer a little bit, and they kept me and for a half hour after class. They wouldn't let me leave. So this is it's going to take off.
Yeah, I think Julie is right. I mean, I think it's a niche that just has – first of all, it's a huge niche, and it's being defined. I mean, nobody's really – you know, how many chefs out there are really, like, putting their, you know, their names right next to it besides – Sean Paxton and on a couple others, but that's about it. You know, I mean, it's really there's a lot of growth potential there, I think.
Does anyone off the top of their head, are there any other names of chefs who are cooking with beer? I mean, we know Sean Paxton. He came to New York for New York Craft Beer Week last year, did a great dinner at Moss Farmhouse. Anybody that you know, Nick and Lisa, that you can recommend if you wanted to have a beer dinner?
Yeah, cooking with beer, not so much. I mean, you know, I can think of restaurants off the top of my head that do, you know, I know Blue Hill has a great beer program, you know, in terms of
Blue
pairing.
Blue Hill, really?
Yeah. I mean, I know that they're at Stone Barns, their beverage director, if it's still the same person, but, you know, a while ago, was just really interested in doing some stuff with food and beer. You know, I don't know how much they cook with it, but... you know, I think they have their own beer,
mm-hmm.
you know, coming out of Kelso,
right?
You know, down in Brooklyn here. And, you know, Ferran Adrià, like I mentioned before, he worked with, you know, a very well-known brewer over in Europe to develop his own beer that he was going to pair with his food. You know, and, you know, cooking, like you said, I think it's kind of tricky, you know, and the... especially the newer, more hop-forward stuff, it just doesn't work so well.
You know, I'm just going to change the subject for a second. There's this recipe that I remember reading about, a barbecue recipe, where you get a chicken and you stick it on a can of beer.
Yeah, beer can chicken.
Beer can chicken.
You know this recipe?
Yeah. Yes. And people swear by that.
Oh, I've done it millions of times. It's great.
They sell the setup for it. They sell the cage that you put the chicken around.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
I wonder if you could do it, you know, with like a can of soda too. I don't know how much the,
wait,
the
is,
beer
is,
has
is
to
it
do
open
with it,
can of beer and unopened can
it's
of beer.
It's open.
Yeah, it's open.
Okay, somebody walk me through this recipe.
I did my Thanksgiving turkey on it when.
Tell me how this works.
So you just you know, you take a, it's a beer can, or but they have these devices, you know, these big sort of tray things with a cylinder in the middle that you fill with beer, and then you just plop the thing right down, you know, on its ass. And just the, you know, all the moisture,
makes sense.
All the moisture evaporates into
but
the meat.
What about if you just use a beer can? You have to open
that's
right?
The original recipe.
You have to open the can.
You open the can.
You got to cut off the top.
Explode the can.
No, you got to cut off the, you know, you cut off the top. And but the whole idea is that it evaporates into the meat.
And it moisturizes the meat.
It steams from the inside and roasts from the outside, and you get this kind of crispy, moist. You know, it probably was invented out in the bio somewhere.
Right, you put it on a grill. You put it on an open fire, right? You're not going to do this on your oven. This is not an oven roasted chicken. This is an open fire.
It's a NASCAR recipe.
You know, basically. I feel like I've seen it on a restaurant menu somewhere, and you know, who knows how they actually do it in a restaurant kitchen.
Beer canned chicken, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, no, it works though. I gotta say,
you know, I think PBR is the prescribed beer to do that with.
It's hard to pour a good beer into a turkey's ass or a chicken's ass.
Doctor's orders, Dave.
Yeah, now I know.
But actually, going in the reverse, I visited Dogfish Head back in February, and I met with Klaus Hagelman, who's one of their indie guru, I think is his title. And their focus right now, in addition to micro distilling, is pushing and forming relationships with people like Nick and I to incorporate their beer into cooking. And that's their primary focus, and that's the relationship that they want to form with us. So we're going to be messing around with some of the Dogfish Head stuff.
That's
great. Certainly
a
lot to be explored in that one.
Well, it looks like a lot of fun. And Nick, you're also a home brewer, right?
I am. Both
what came
of us
first,
are.
Chefing or home brewing?
Chefing.
Chefing, you know, yeah.
For me, chefing.
My primary, that's the breadwinner there. My home brewers are, you know.
You're not making any money homebrewing?
Not yet. Not yet.
And what is this that we're drinking? This is one of your home brews?
Yes, this is. This is a triple that I brewed. I have to give a little shout out to Captain Lawrence because I was trying to duplicate their liquid gold and was completely unsuccessful at that, but it still came out pretty well.
It's very good.
It's excellent.
It is good. What kind of yeast are you using?
I was using, it's a White Labs, and it's a Belgian. I can't remember off the top of my head which number it is, but it's a.
Oh, you didn't propagate it yourself from the bottom of a bottle of Chimay or something?
No, I just bought it. I bought a vial of White Labs and propagated it. I figured I needed a pretty big population to get this one going. It's probably between 6% and 7%. I did if we want to get technical, I did a mini mash, and then the rest of it is extract, Pilsner extract.
It's really well done. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
So what would you pair this with? What kind of food?
So it's got to, you know, get into the tasting notes. It's definitely got some of that clovey, estery stuff.
Definitely, yeah.
It's got enough alcohol and body to it. You know, I mean, I think you could do, you know, anything from, you know, braises. You do like a braised short rib if you wanted to do something heavier and darker.
You'd cook with this or you'd pair it with it?
I would pair it with it. I mean, you could cook. It's not heavily hopped, so you
would
could
you shove
cook
this
it.
Beer up a turkey's ass?
I put
question.
Way too much work into this to shove it up a turkey's ass. I don't think I would feel all that good about it. And also, you know, I only brew 5 gallons at a time, so no, I don't have much
wine,
to spare.
When you cook with wine, they say that you're supposed to cook with as good a wine as you would drink. And I've cooked a lot with beer. When I first opened Jimmy's Number 43, I had a lot of recipes that were – I always cooked with wine. And over about 6 months, I transferred them to be recipes with beer. And one time I had a bunch of the old vintage of Sammy Klaus. We had 4 cases from when we took over that bar. And I made the Sammy Klaus chili for 6 months. And the Sammy Klaus is this – it was about – I don't know. Was it 2000? When was the last vintage of Sammy Klaus? Does anyone know that?
It's still available.
Well, they made it again, but the last vintage of the original Sammy Klaus.
The switchfoot stuff.
It was like 2000, whatever it was. I made 6 months worth of chili with that. It was awesome.
You know, that beer is probably great for – it's so sweet.
Well, it had an espresso quality, too, at the end. It was
right, and it wasn't very hoppy either. So I bet that's a great beer to cook with.
Yeah, actually, speaking of chili, you know, Jimmy, you and I were talking about I entered a chili contest that you hosted at Jimmy's, and I used some Heritage Foods pork, and I used some grass-fed beef, and I had made my own chili powder, and I was trying to I wanted to put a beer in there, and I was trying to figure out what I wanted to use, and those chilies, you know, speaking of cooking with beer, the chilies have especially the dried ones, when you toast them, have a very raisiny kind of flavor to them, and I was it, you know, the beginning of my Belgian phase at that point, and I just thought like Belgian double, that kind of raisiny toasty thing.
Yeah, that's,
I mean, that was the thing. That was, and I, you know, I put a little bit of that in there, and it really, I mean, that, talk about something that really worked out well, you know, and I think, you know, just displays like the versatility of beer, you know, and then you, of course, you can just pair it with it after that.
Right. Yeah, the Belgian beers are good for cooking, I think.
Yeah.
Or better.
And I think that's because there's not that much of a hop character.
No, exactly. Mm-hmm. That's why.
I mean, and there are hoppy Belgian beers, absolutely, but
right.
But there's a lot of Belgian beers.
And they're fruity. And,
yeah.
You know,
But I think it's great today. I think, you know, if we look back and say, what have we learned today? I think we've learned a new qualification of beer. It's, you know, there's like, you know, lawnmower beer. There's, you know, beer that you drink in the summertime. There's beer that you drink in the wintertime. Holiday beers. And there's beer that you will shove up a turkey's ass. I think that. Julia, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here. I think you guys geek out. It's great.
I think that if you have any influence with the the Great American Beer Festival, that might be a classification. Maybe you should talk to those guys over there and get that in there.
I can't imagine anyone wanting to make that beer, but you never know.
Well, you know, I gotta defend at least some of the local brewers. Oscar Blues, who makes Dale's Pale Ale, which you guys probably know, is rated amazing. I mean, it's definitely a Colorado Pale Ale. Big IBUs, but the bottom line is they use that for their beer can chicken, and it boiled the heck out of it when it sat there, and it's never an issue from the hops. It's always a moist, moist chicken that just kind of falls apart when you get to taste it.
So and sometimes Oscar Blues has some hops.
Yeah, that sounds good.
That sounds really, I'm really hungry.
Well, we are here at Roberta's in Bushwick, so we're looking forward to a pretty good meal after this. Let's take another short break. We're gonna elevate the tone of this conversation. We'll be back with architect Vlad Kowalik and on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
Yeah. What is it good for? Absolutely
nothing.
Absolutely
nothing.
Say it again, y'all.
Look
out.
What is it good for?
Absolutely
nothing.
Listen to me.
Oh,
I despise. Cause it means destruction of this life. War means tears to thousands of mothers I have. When their sons go out to fight and lose their.
The following is a public service announcement from Heritage Radio Network. Tune in to Greenhorn Radio, hosted by Severin von Scharner Fleming, every Thursday at 2 p.m. Greenhorn Radio is radio for young farmers by young farmers. Helmed by acclaimed activist, farmer, and documentarian Severin Fleming, Greenhorn Radio is a weekly phone interview session surveying America's cutting-edge under 40 farmers. Again, that's every Thursday at 2 p.m. on the Heritage Radio Network.
All right. Welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network. You know, Greenhorn Radio is pretty cool. Severin von Fleming, she's finally finished her film, The Greenhorns, and I saw it last week at Anthology Film Archives in Manhattan, but we're going to give a shout-out to Heritage Radio Network. We have some great hosts, and every few months there's some really new, cool shows. So thank you to Patrick Martins for setting this up. We love this, bro. All right, here we are back, Beer Sessions Radio, with our cool guest. Our new guest just walked in, Vlad Kowalik. Very cool guy. He's from New York City Homebrewers Guild. And also now he's been the architect for the Brooklyn Brewery expansion. So he's privy to many secrets. Vlad, how are you? Welcome to the show.
I'm doing well, Jimmy. Thanks.
Did you bring a beer for us?
I did. I brought a couple of barley wines, two vintages, a 2008 and a 2009, similar recipes. So
these are beers that you made.
That's right. So we could do a bit of a vertical tasting.
That's what we have right here in our hands right now.
This is a 2008.
All right. Well, before we get to that, we're going to ask you some questions because you're a pretty neat guy. You're a leader of the New York City Homebrewers Guild. When did you first get involved with that group?
About 2006.
Okay, and what brought you to them?
I had a buddy that dragged me to a meeting, and I don't know, it was controlled chaos, and I kind of dug it. And I kind of stayed under the radar, and then did a another friend encouraged me to enter a competition. Said, hey, you're doing pretty well with this beer making thing. Why don't you see what other people think? And right off the bat, I took a best of show, and then next thing you know, everybody knew my name at the club. So
he's just a quiet genius here. Well, I know you beers, and I know you. And one thing that is really cool is that you've been involved in the Beer Judge Certificate Program. Tell us more about that, because this goes back to, we were talking about beer education, and it's one of the coolest programs around. Tell us how you got involved, what's the program like, and I know that Dave and Ray have a lot to say about it too, so...
Sure. The New York City Homebrewers Guild has offered BJCP classes. Now, BJCP, as you pointed out, is a beer judge certification program. It is a non-for-profit organization that every, for the most part, respected homebrew competition in the States, and you know, it's, the program's growing overseas now as well, is a BJCP certified competition. So, as well as being the umbrella organization for the competitions, it also has a program for training judges and recognizing their judging abilities. So four out of the last 6 years, the New York City Homebrewers Guild has offered BJCP training classes, and we're graduating a lot of judges. I mean, we've got judges that are scoring consistently well on the exam and are nationally ranked, which is a big honor. About 10% of the judges in this country, of which there are 2,000 in total, give or take, are nationally ranked, and we've got four in our ranks right now. So,
yeah, Vlad, tell people like what the classes are. I mean, I took it a long time ago, and it was really intense. So why don't you tell people what the classes are like?
Yeah, I like to compare it to a 3-credit college class. Seriously, we do classes at Jimmy's every Tuesday night for 3.5 months. The classes run about 4 hours. There is a technical segment followed by a tasting segment. The technical segments run from everything from fermentation, mashing, malting, basically every technical aspect, off flavors, everything that you could ever consider, from the field where barley is grown or hops are grown all the way to a finished product in your glass. And the exam is very heavy on those topics. And then on top of that, to make it even more challenging, you have to know 26 different beer styles and their 2 to 5 sub-styles. So we're talking about 100 some odd beer sub-styles that you need to be intimately familiar with for the exam. And so the exam is 3.5 hours long. You'll be handwriting 10 pages.
Wait, slow down. Okay, let's say this. So I'm going to walk into the test. Yeah. I've been studying a long time. I know I drink a lot of beer, but I don't know that much about it. You're just going to give me a beer and say, okay, what kind of beer is this? What style is this? Or are you going to give me any guidelines?
There are guidelines. That's exactly right.
So how will this work? So you're going to give me what? Guidelines and then a beer?
Yeah, exactly. So in the exam, there are 4 beers that you have to judge. And you don't have the guidelines in front of you on the exam. So, for example, I will give you a Saison, and you will have to judge that beer without the style guidelines and talk about how that beer is good or bad in relationship.
But you're told that it's a Saison. You know what the beer is.
That's correct. However, to throw a curveball at you, at least one of those beers will have a flaw. It'll be a doctored beer, so you have to be able to pick that up as well.
This sounds like a lot of fun. This is all what beer's about, isn't it?
You haven't done this, Ray, yet?
Not yet. No, I haven't. But I will do it eventually.
Are we going to put Ray on the spot? So, Ray, you've got a Saison in front of you. What would you say? You know, this is where I think we have to turn over the professionals. And Nick and Lisa, are you guys planning any like really rigorous beer classes like that, like the BJCP?
I don't know that we're going to start off with that. I think, you know, most students just want to know the fundamentals. I think really the important thing is breaking it down. I won't say that beer is more complex than wine, but beer has a lot.
I'll say it.
Okay, so she said it. It has a lot more elements. You have the malt, you have the yeast, which is much more pronounced generally. You have the hops, which are something that, you know, is just that kind of dimension is completely non-existent in wine. I think what we want to try and do, first of all, is just break down, and what I think is really interesting is, you know, what does, like you said before, what does malt taste like? What do hops taste like? What do they contribute? What do different kinds of hops taste like?
All right, we've got a pretty good group of beer experts in this room. We've got a couple questions. The first question is from a listener, Mike P. in Brooklyn. Okay. If 17 seconds of direct light exposure is all it takes to skunk a beer, why doesn't beer get skunked in my pint glass? Dave Broderick. Isn't that a weird question?
I always drink mine faster than 17 seconds.
There's the answer.
Vlad, is this a type of question you get on the BJCP exam?
Yeah, but not the 17 seconds part. That threw me.
What would the question be like if it was BJCP? Like, what would they say about skunking beer?
That's exactly the question. There'll be a question that says, there are these three flavor profiles, name whether they're good, bad, neutral, and how are they caused, and one of them might be skunkiness.
All right.
Ray? I would say, I mean,
Ray,
of course.
Ray drinks in the dark, so he's like...
Well, it's a safety measure. It's a precaution that I like to use. And I do drink in the dark. It's not even a joke.
I know.
Is that why they have cozies when you're outside, those cozies to keep your beer? Maybe it's to keep them from the light.
I think the lights in a bar are going to be a lot more kind to the beer than lights in the cooler at your local deli or the lights from the sunshine. I mean, you're in a bar, you've got like nice, you know, mood lighting, and it's not going to affect the beer. And, of course, you are going to quaff it down in 16.5 seconds.
All right. Well, Vlad's got another thing going on that is probably really cool, and we're all jealous of him. He's an architect, and he's worked on the Brooklyn Brewery expansion. And how did you ever get involved working with Brooklyn Brewery?
Yeah, I sort of fell into it. The company that I currently work at, Fradkin McAlpin Architects, my boss did the original brewery expansion, the original brewery renovation in 1996. And I met him shortly after he had done that. And I did my first work with the brewery in the early 2000s when they added a few fermenters. And luckily, we've had a good ongoing relationship, our company and Brooklyn Brewery. So it's been fabulous. And the overlap between being a home brewer and the architect for a brewery is just phenomenal. It's perfect synergy.
Ray, have you been to the expanded Brooklyn Brewery?
No, I haven't, and it's pathetic that I haven't. But I'm going on Monday because this coming Monday they're releasing the tonic, that new Brewmaster special, and I'm looking forward to getting out there on Monday night after Liquids of Interest. Yeah, Brewmasters.
Dave, have you been to the expanded Brooklyn Brewery?
Yeah, I went out in the middle of March. And it's pretty impressive. I mean, it's huge. And Garrett's got like both sides of the street now. He's got his warm room. He's got his barrel aging room. He's got all these unlabeled bottles, so the salesmen don't know what they are, so they won't steal them. only he knows what
That's
they
brilliant.
Are. He's dealt with salesmen before.
And Nick, have you been there to the expanded Brooklyn Brewery?
I haven't been to the expanded one. I've seen pictures of it online. I wanted to ask Vlad a question because as a home brewer and someone who loves gadgets and building my own stuff, and you know, my wife is probably drives her nuts, but I'm wondering if from having done that and seen inside a professional brewery as a home brewer, is there something, you know, that you've realized this is a piece of equipment or this is a system that I need to try and incorporate into my own, you know, brewing apparatus?
No. No, but seriously, it's all a matter of scale, right? When you're producing 50 barrel batches and you're doing four of them to fill a fermenter, it's very different than doing 5 gallons at a time. Shoot, I even do sometimes 3 or 4 gallons at a time, depending on how big the beer is and how, you know, what goes into it. So I don't think that there's a, you know, everything that home brewers do is rooted in the way that commercial brewers do it, but it's scaled down and made, you know, handy for what we do and how we do it. So I think
as a home brewer, did that help you in your work with Garrett and those guys over there at Brooklyn Brewery?
Being familiar with the process?
Yes.
Absolutely. You know, having my conversations with the equipment vendors and, you know, the guys, you know, they're great, the equipment vendors, but they'll come up with a proposal and they'll say, this is how it's got to be done. And I'm going to scratch my head and say, that could work really well, but it looks really crummy. So then I start thinking about, you know, how I can make it look good and function well. And yeah, it's perfect
overlap.
So it's
an asset.
Yeah, absolutely.
It makes sense.
So Vlad, I remember when I was there and talking to some of the brewers at Brooklyn, they were saying that they were really trying to adjust to a more computerized system.
Yeah.
And that was the hardest thing for them was doing it with a mouse rather than like more hands-on. And so have you talked to them a lot about that and how that's going?
I haven't had too many of those conversations, but I do see some unhappy faces every once in a while. And I see them in the control room a lot more than, cleaning out things and manually putting things into vessels.
So you spend a lot of time still at the actual brewery?
I do. But we're still ongoing. I mean, we're on phase two of the expansion. So phase one was sort of like if you were to build a car and you put this massive engine in it, but you put it in a Yugo. You know, so right now we're filling out the rest of the vehicle. We're putting in fermenters and a tremendous kegging line, like 2 half-barrel kegs per minute. I mean, the amount of technology that's going into the brewery is just amazing.
Yeah, it is amazing. I think they're going to be able to go from, they were doing what, like 15,000 in Brooklyn to 98,000 when all the tanks are in.
That's a year,
that's
right?
That's what Garrett said. Yeah, a year. So that's just a massive change. And they still have the old brew house in place, and now they've got this new one.
So are they still going to be using the contract brewing stuff upstate?
I believe
for
so.
For the bottles,
yeah,
I think.
There's no right now program or intent to put a bottling line besides the cork-finished 750s.
Right, for the specialty stuff.
And what are they going to do with the old production facility? They're making small batch beers?
Yeah, they're keeping it. Exactly. Just for that.
I saw that they have some really cool tour. They're calling them small batch tours. And you can go, I don't know, do you know more about it, Vlad?
I do know more about it. It's weekdays. Right? Previously, they only had weekend tours. And I believe it's from 5 to 8 p.m., $8. And you need to RSVP in advance.
So you can try the small batch beers that they're making.
And you also have a personalized the small batch really is, it's a play on words because it's for a very small group of people. So it's a more intimate tour and it's, lets you know more about the process in an intimate way.
You know, the Brooklyn Brewery is just making the whole Williamsburg riverfront area, just the north side, just so much more interesting. There's so many great things going on there. It's a great tour over there. There's a bar called DBA that's not far from the Brooklyn Brewery.
DBA. I want to put in a plug. I will say this about Brooklyn Brewery, that I think that, in the 1900s, there were what? Some people said hundreds, some people say 40-something. There were many breweries, especially in Bushwick and Williamsburg area of Brooklyn. We have to really give a big, kudos to Garrett Oliver and all those guys over there, Steve Hindy. New York, needs some really great brewers that are thriving. It's a big brewing town. We drink a lot of beer, and I can only take my hat off. And even though they've expanded and grown, they're still a very small brewery.
Yeah, I mean, it's expensive to do anything, especially manufacturing in New York City. It's just like so difficult, and the government doesn't make it any easier. So yeah, it's amazing what they're doing. Yeah, and then this expansion, now they're a real brewery in Brooklyn.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to trying some of the new beers that they make.
You going out there on Monday, Jim?
I'm looking forward to trying the tonic. So let's give a shout-out to the bunch of really cool Good Beer Seal and other beer events coming up. Monday, Ray?
Yeah, we're doing Liquids of Interest this Monday, and we're doing my dad's beer. And we're just going to taste a bunch of like kind of old school lagers, the Pabst, the Old Milwaukee, that kind of stuff. And we're going to do a blind tasting, and we're going to try and do some reading on it. It's going to be really fun this Monday. So check it out.
All right, Dave. Anything special going on at Blind Tiger?
We've got Bear Republic next Wednesday, the 25th.
All right, Vlad. You want to give a shout out for anything at Brooklyn Brewery?
Well, you already talked about the Brewmaster's Reserve. Other than that,
so Monday you're going to get the premiere of the tonic, right? At Brooklyn Brewery. And at Barcade, they're hosting Sly Fox versus Southampton Night Thursday, May 19th. The Pony Bar is hosting the Main Event, a 3-day event featuring some of the best from Maine, including Geary's, Sea Dog, Allagash, and Shipyard. Jimmy's number 43, we're producing Brewer's Picnic on Governor's Island, May 29th and 30th. And start checking out UK Beer Weekend, June 10th and 11th. A little bit of cask, a little bit of vintage beer. You'll see that. Check it out on beermenus.com. So I'd like to thank our sponsors at greatbrewers.com who have helped to bring this podcast to you tonight. Beer Sessions Radio is supported by the Good Beer Seal, goodbeerseal.com. And thanks to Ray, Julia, Dave, Nick, Lisa, and Vlad for joining me here on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producers, Jack Inslee and Brie O'Connor. We'll see you next time on Beer Sessions Radio.
This little song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.
This little refrain should help me explain as a matter.
This is Behind the Scenes News with Katie Kiefer. Just this week, I read about one of my favorite television personalities, Mike Rowe of Dirty Jobs, who testified in Congress about how disconnected Americans in general have become from the people who produce their food or fix their pipes, make their clothes, etc. Here's what he said. I believe we need a national PR campaign for skilled labor, something that addresses the widening skills gap head on and reconnects the country with the most important part of our workforce. Right now, American manufacturing is struggling to fill 200,000 vacant positions, and there are 450,000 openings in trades, transportation, and utilities. The skills gap is real, and it's getting wider. In Alabama, a third of all skilled tradesmen are over 55. They're retiring fast, and no one is there to replace them. In general, we are surprised that high unemployment can exist at the same time as a skilled labor shortage, but we shouldn't be. We've pretty much guaranteed it. In high schools, the vocational arts have all but vanished. We've elevated the importance of higher education to such a lofty perch that all other forms of knowledge are now labeled alternative. Millions of parents and kids see apprenticeships and on-the-job training opportunities as, quote, vocational consolation prizes, best suited for those not cut out for a four-year degree. And still, we talk about millions of shovel-ready jobs for a society that does not encourage people to pick up a shovel. In 100 different ways, we've slowly marginalized an entire category of critical professions, reshaping our expectations of a good job into something that no longer looks like work. A few years from now, an hour with a good plumber, if you can find one, is going to cost you more than an hour with a good psychiatrist. So check out Mike Rowe Works, that's his website, where he is announcing a broad-based initiative from Discovery Communications called Discover Your Skills. I think he has a lot of interesting points to be made here, and I think everybody would do well to take a look at it. So this is Behind the Scenes News from Katie Kiefer. Thanks for listening.
The following is a message from Heritage Foods USA. In the next few weeks, Heritage Foods USA will be offering an interesting variety of amazing products, ranging from top-quality seafood to their famous pork cuts. At the end of May, the Heritage team will go up to Maine to harvest fresh lobster with sustainable lobstermen. These delicious lobster are a perfect way to kick off the summer season. In the pork department, Heritage Foods USA will offer the maple-cured, smoked, boneless Heritage ham at an unbeatable price. This offer won't last long, so get them while you can. Place your order today at heritagefoodsusa.com or call 718-389-0985. That's 718-389-0985 to place your order with Andrea or Ashley. And don't forget to sign up for the email list and to check them on Facebook and Twitter to get in on their new products, deals, and offers from Heritage Foods USA.